Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
It is Monday, December 16th at 10 a.m., and that means it's Speak Up time. I'm your host, Carl, as always at this time. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I want to apologize in advance because there's some construction going on outside, and it is probably going to be audible, not right now, but later on in this episode. But I have some pre-recorded stuff, luckily, which is why hopefully we can try to figure this out, even with the usual construction happening here at SFU. I want to get right into my first segment today, which, if you tuned in last week, is going to be on this day in history. And the day, of course, is December 16th. But first, let me load up my theme music. Oh, that is not my theme music. Wait, let me figure this out. Yes, that's much more like it. So today, on December 16th, something actually happened in history, something of actual historical significance, and that is on December 16, 1773, the Boston Tea Party. Some American patriots disguise themselves as Mohawk Indians and throw some tea from ships to protest the British, which is, of course, a very important event for the independence of the U.S., and it's so important that even I learn about this in school, you learn about this in school, and that's why I honestly don't really want to get too much into the details of this, because I want to make the point of the show to teach you about some weird and really obscure history that you hopefully don't know about, and maybe not the most important history in a way. But just some fun anecdotes. And for this today, we are not going that far back. In fact, most of these are in the 90s, actually. And the first history is on December 16, 1993, actress Shannon Doherty, who played Brenda on the TV series Beverly Hills 90210, is fired from the show. Now, the most popularized reason for why this happened is that she didn't get along with her co-star, Tori Spelling, and Tori Spelling's dad was the producer of the show. And the way the story goes is that she apparently convinced her dad to fire Shannon. However, interestingly enough, Tori herself says that Shannon and her never had any problems with one another. In fact, it seems that they're very close friends. So, yeah, it's still left in ambiguity what really happened that Shannon Doherty got fired. If you want to Google this, you will find at least five different reasons. At least that's what my experience was. So yeah, it remains a mystery. In more history, on December 16, 1995, the European Council meets in Madrid to find a name for the EU currency, and they come up with euro, the least creative option. On December 16, 1997, US President Bill Clinton names his Labrador Retriever Buddy. And yes, this is the kind of history we're getting into today. So Buddy was a male chocolate-covered Labrador... chocolate-colored Labrador Retriever. He was one of the two pets kept by the Clinton family while Bill Clinton was president of the United States. The Clinton's other pet, or first pet, should I say, was a cat named Socks. Now, Buddy, the dog, was named after Bill Clinton's late great uncle, Henry Orrin Gresham, who was also called Buddy, who had died in the previous June and whom Clinton had often cited as a major influence on his life. Which, to be honest, I don't know if naming your dog after someone is really the best way to honor that person. But hey, different strokes for different folks, right? So sadly, the cat, Sox, did not get along with Buddy, so the White House had to keep them in two separate quarters. And here's another fun fact about Buddy. The First Lady Hillary Clinton wrote a children's book called Dear Sox, Dear Buddy, Kids' Letters to the First Pets in 1998. It included excerpts from more than 50 letters written to the first pets by children and more than 80 photographs of the cat and the dog. Now, I feel like if you're the first lady and you're still married to the president, you should be like set for life, and it shouldn't be necessary for you to really make money off a book. So that's why I'm actually willing to believe this might be like a passion project. Although to be fair, I really have no idea how much you earn being the president. So who knows, maybe this is how the Clintons can finance their pension these days. Tragically, Buddy passed away in 2002 after being hit by a car driven by a 17-year-old girl, which is just like, imagine being the person responsible for murdering the first dog of the United States. That's rough. I would not like to be that person. And what's even worse is that the Clintons weren't home at the time, and their house was being watched by Secret Service agents, who I guess just let the dog roam free, which, I don't know, might serve as a good political metaphor for something. But in more history, and if you listen to my last episode, you know I really like astronomy stuff, even though I don't know too much about it. On December 16, 2009, some astronomers discovered GJ1214b, also known as Gliese 1214b. I am just going to call it Gliese for the rest of this segment, which is not entirely accurate, but it makes it easier for me. And what Gliese was that it was the first known exoplanet on which water could exist. It is also a super Earth, which basically just means it's bigger than our Earth, and it is 40 light years away from our planet. Gliese is the first super Earth found with an atmosphere rich in water, and it was detected by the M-Earth project, which searches for small drops in brightness that can occur when an orbiting planet briefly passes in front of its parent star. And the astronomers running the project noticed that the star Gliese, or GJ1214, appeared to show drops in brightness of that sort. Now, sadly, it appears to be rather hot and surrounded by a thick atmosphere, which makes it inhospitable for life as we know it on Earth. And astronomers also claim that the temperature on Gliese is probably far too high for any extraterrestrial life to exist there. But not to worry, in the Milky Way alone, there are 40 billion Earth-sized planets orbiting the habitable zones of Sun-like stars. The closest and probably the most famous one out of these is Kepler-186f, an Earth-sized planet in the habitable zone, which is only 500 light-years from us. Which, if things ever go bad, you know, we may or may not have a backup, at least if we invent light-speed travel by then. So yeah, so much for history today. Again, not the most eventful day, except for the Boston Tea Party thing, of course. I'm going to play a song next, and I might play a bit more music in this episode than usual, because as you may be able to notice, I'm a bit sick. And I'm going to play a song by a group called The Divination Review. And the song is called Hard and Haste, I Wished It So.
my heart in haste, pride, let it be. Don't measure out love's quantity, let it be. Sometimes just let it be. Love the burden, love the tragic fall. And my heart in haste cried, look again. Love's a boon, though it brings you pain, it brings you pain. Sometimes it brings you pain.
Up. Don't smoke here. I need help. There's a wildfire in the forest.
In BC, approximately 43% of all wildfires are caused by people. It is important to exercise caution when outdoors. For more information, visit bcwildfire.ca or call 1-888-336-7378. 1-888-336-7378.
Did you know that cannabis was recently legalized in Canada? With this new legalization, the laws surrounding cannabis use and driving have also been affected. You have probably heard that cannabis use does not affect your driving, but that statement is a myth. Some of the effects cannabis has on a person driving are reduced alertness, altered perception of time and distance, and it also results in reduced ability to react to unexpected events on the road. We at Mothers Against Drunk Driving are here to keep impaired drivers off of the roads and to keep the people of our community safe.
Go to mad.ca to learn more about driving under the influence.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, and this is Speak Up. And you can probably hear some construction happening outside, which I hope my background music can at least cover up a little, as to not ruin your listening experience. Speaking of which, I have a new segment to debut, and that is an idea I came up with last week. This is called FAQ. Frequently asked questions, where I want to answer the questions that you've always been asking yourself but never bothered to look up the answer for. And the first question for this that I'm going to try my best to answer for you today is, why is it that British singers and singers from a lot of countries, in fact, often sing in American accents? This is something I've been very aware of recently, that even in classic songs by the Beatles, for example, you will notice that they pick up American accents pretty frequently, actually, rather than keeping their native accents. So I found a website called Ace Linguist, which has an article about dissecting dialects in Beatles songs. And this is interesting because the Beatles themselves have said that they purposefully keep their own accents. But what I want to prove to you today is that even with this statement, they have picked up some Americanisms. Or is it really Americanisms? That's another discussion that I'm going to bring up later. So I want to talk about the American accent. So one of the major giveaways of the American accent is that the ER, the R sound at the end of a word, is always pronounced. So for example, in the word singer, you would pronounce the end singer instead of singer. So instead of just like dropping the R at the end, the way that most British accents do it. This is because the American English is rhotic, meaning that every R before a consonant is pronounced. You will notice this in words such as the word hard, the word Burnaby, and the word person, where you explicitly say the R instead of leaving it out and replacing it with kind of an more of an EA sound, kind of more of a person, I guess. So to give you a better example of this, I want to show you what the British pronunciation of the word girl sounds like, and for that the background music has to go, sadly. This is from a text-to-speech website, a British pronunciation of the word girl.
girl.
So what you can hear here, and I'm actually going to play it again if I can, is that try to look for the R sound.
Girl.
And you will notice that there pretty much is no R sound. Now, just to clarify this, of course, there are different dialects in Britain, but the majority of them are not rhotic. So for comparison, I'm going to show you the standard American pronunciation of the same word, and it sounds like this. Okay, I'm going to play that once again because I have to fade in. This
girl.
Okay, I'm going to play it one more time, sorry.
Girl.
Yeah, so what you can hear here is that the R in girl is very much pronounced. And now, for comparison, I want to play you a short segment from the Beatles song Another Girl. This is how they say it, and I want you to pay very close attention to how they say the word girl. This is the Beatles.
Another girl.
Now, I think you can see what I'm trying to show you is that, weirdly, even though they even proclaim to keep their British accents in their music, they use the American pronunciation, or rather the rhotic pronunciation. And interestingly enough, in the very same song, they also have another pronunciation of the word girl. I want you to listen to this, in the same song, Another Girl, I would say more British pronunciation of the word.
Another girl, another girl, another girl.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, it seems that in the same song, they have both the typical American pronunciation and the British pronunciation, which leads me to think that it might not be as conscious as you might be led to think. To give you some more examples of the American accents in Beatles music, another very typical feature of the American accent is the use of unrounded vowels. For example, in words like God or lot, the O becomes like an R sound, similarly to the R sound in the word father. And in the British English, they use round vowels, which they're called round vowels because you literally kind of round your lips when making the sound. So instead of God, they would say God. And instead of lot, they would say lot. And yes, there is a certain irony to me, a person with neither a British nor American accent, trying to do both of these accents. So for comparison, let's do the same thing again. Listen to the standard British English pronunciation of the word lost. Let me find this real quick.
Lost.
Okay, I want to play this once more with a bit louder this time.
Lost.
Okay, so you can clearly hear how they say lost, and it's this O sound instead of R sound, which personally I think I'm very inconsistent in the way that I say this, because we mostly learned, I guess, British English in school. At least that's what all these sort of audio examples of what we learned were like. And now that I've spent like 3 months in Canada, it's like it's some weird mixture between the things I've learned there in school and the things I've learned here. So now let's again hear the American pronunciation of the word lost.
Lost.
Okay, so you can clearly hear how it's an unrounded O, so it's lost instead of lost, more like. Okay, let me play the American one once again, just so you have this in mind later.
Lost.
Okay, and now, again, I want to play a Beatles song, and that is from the song You Won't See Me, an example of how the Beatles would pronounce the word lost. Okay, so I want you to listen to this.
We have lost the time. I don't know why you should want to hide.
Okay, I'm gonna go back to the the lost. We have lost the time. Okay, let me play it once again. Yeah, so I think you get the point I'm trying to make. That weirdly, in really British singers seem to switch to what seems to be an American accent, even though if it is actually an American accent, that's what we're going to find out next. But this is... been a topic of controversy even, because a singer named Alesha Dixon was heavily criticized for singing the British national anthem in what seemed to be an American accent. Now, she herself says that she was singing the song in a soul style. So why is it that singing something in a different style of music seems to sort of correlate with singing in a different accent, or specifically the American accent? Now, of course, as you, I have to clarify, this only affects some singers, and I would almost say the majority of British singers actually keep their own accents. Often this can be for stylistic reasons. A lot of punk bands, for example, like The Clash, seem to intentionally keep their accents, which is very interesting. I guess there's almost a statement contained in that. But then on the other hand, you have the Arctic Monkeys, for example, who, especially in their earlier music, sing in very heavy and very noticeable northern accents. And that is why I'm going to play a very short Arctic Monkeys song from their first album. This is You Probably Couldn't See For The Lights, But You Were Staring Right At Me. You Were Staring Straight At Me, which is a song title that is way too long for my own personal tastes. And I want you to just enjoy this non-American accent for a minute. This is Arctic Monkeys.
Expressions
All right, Arctic Monkeys with You Probably Couldn't See For The Lights, But You Were Staring Straight At Me. So I think I've given you some pretty good examples of what of this phenomenon that people, British people specifically, seem to often switch to what sounds like an American accent. But interestingly enough, a lot of people suggest that it's not actually an American accent, but more of sort of a neutral speaking voice that just kind of happens when you sing. And this is apparently because the syllables aren't emphasized like they are in a normal speaking pattern. And that's what makes them become neutralized. But even so, it is weird that this neutralized accent would be what the American accent just happens to sound like. So there's some theories that say that because pop music was invented in the USA, it's the rhythms and the cadence of those songs that just suit an American voice, just because that's the origins of that style of music. And Professor Jane Sedder, who is the head of English language and applied linguistics at the University of Reading, says that this trend was driven by the popularity of American pop singers, who just happened to sort of set an example in a way. And she says that a lot of our modern music is blues, and blues comes out of an American tradition. In terms of pop music, the British were a little behind the States, so they were all copying musicians like Elvis Presley, who was seen as very radical. So what this suggests is that these singers seem to consciously put on the accent. Now, Andy Gibson, who's a sociologist at the Auckland University of Technology, did a study on this, and he found, and I quote, "Studies in the past have suggested that non-American singers willfully put on American accents, but my research suggests the opposite, that an American-influenced accent is the default when singing pop." So the question we have here sort of is it a conscious decision putting on an American accent, or is it just sort of the natural phenomenon that happens when switching into pop music? And what the study also says is that the American influence accent is automatic in the context of singing pop music, and it is used by people from all around the world. And Andy Gibson also says it actually requires effort to do something different. The American accent doesn't stick out in singing because we are so used to hearing it. He also explains that the accent people use when they are singing depends more on the style of music rather than where they come from. For example, when we sing in reggae, we are more likely to use a Jamaican accent, but even someone from Jamaica might use a Southern American accent when they are singing country and Western type songs, he added. So yeah, to sum this up, it's the most likely theory, I suppose, suggests that it's the origin of the style of music that influences what accent you put on, and the accent is just sort of almost ingrained in that style of music. Although, of course, as we have just heard, variations can be made on this. Super interesting topic, accents. And I'm going to play you some music next that I'm pretty sure is sung in a very standard American accent. This is Rolling Thunder by Lila Gilday from her newest album, North Star Calling.
Coming on, of your spine. Hear them ring. War cries. It's the sound of the people.
Lila Gilday with Rolling Thunder from North Star Calling. Next up, I have another new segment from you for you that I produced this last Thursday. And this comes from an idea that I've had, that you always hear these voices on the radio. But when I hear radio hosts, I always wonder, like, who is this person? What is this person do and what are they like? So I figured I would make a show interviewing some of the show hosts here at CJSF. This is a so far very experimental segment called Thursdays on the Hill. And you're going to be hearing some of your favorite CJSF show hosts answer some very weird random questions that I came up with. This is the first episode of Thursdays on the Hill.
Ever wonder what's going down at the CJSF offices? This is the show for you. It's Thursdays on the Hill.
Who are you and what's your position?
I'm Jesse, and I'm the Public Affairs and Talk Coordinator at CJSF.
What are you doing right now?
I'm standing in a room being interviewed by Carl.
Any opinions on the rain?
It is a necessary evil. I would not want to live in a Vancouver that didn't get rain.
Oh, that's controversial. What's for lunch?
Probably coffee, and then not eating anything until my next meal of the day, which will be probably a Subway sandwich for dinner.
Aw, just a Subway sandwich?
Well, there'll be some chips. I'll take some all-dressed chips, layer them into the sandwich, you know.
15 centimeters or 30 centimeters?
Oh, my God. 30 centimeters. A foot long. Come on, Carl.
Yeah, I don't know the English terms.
Oh, so they have Subway in Germany.
Yeah, but we call them 15 centimeters and 30 because we don't use, like,
you don't use feet in inches. Yeah.
Also, it's not, like, that's not how long a foot is, right?
Well,
my foot would be, like, a 15 centimeter.
Yeah, I don't really know where that... I think it was, like, some king's foot was that length. And that's why we have it, or
so
something
you have, like,
stupid.
Really big feet.
Really big feet.
Cool. Next question. What's your least favorite color?
Oh, my least favorite color.
I know what mine is.
It's
purple.
Oh, purple. Oh, you don't like the royal purple? What about?
I just
Prince?
Saw the purple on the wall, and I was just like, oh, I'm sure I go for that.
I mean, like vomit green, poo brown. There are some, like, natural colors that are sort of like, don't like them.
What are you wearing right now?
No, this is forest green. Come on. My least favorite color, though, like,
you can also point on it on the wall. I mean, that's not gonna be
visible
to the listeners, but out of these five, which one
out
is
of,
the
out
least
of
appealing?
Purple, green, orange, red, or yellow? Wow, I'm going to make some enemies here. Probably yellow, I guess.
Really?
But, like, I don't know. I like them all. There's no bad colors. They're all colors.
But, I mean, if you have purple and yellow on the same thing...
That's Easter.
And you choose... Okay, well, opinions, I guess.
You just really don't like purple.
No, it's just... I don't know. It's just something I kind of... I'm realizing right now as we're doing this interview.
You have a deep-seated hatred.
That I don't like the color purple.
It is the color of the upper class. It is like the color of royalty and the color of empire. So maybe you're standing up for the working person.
You think
saying,
this is like a classism
maybe
thing
it is.
For me?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe.
I think your socialist roots are coming through.
Who are you and what's your position here at CJSF?
My name's Robin Erickson, and I am the programming coordinator here at CJSF.
What are you doing right now?
Right now, I'm planning my music show for tomorrow. I do a show called Roots and Berries, and I am listening to some gospel music.
Is it good gospel music?
Of course it is.
Any opinions on rain?
Oh, I have lots of opinions about the rain. Typically, I don't like it when it rains and rains and rains and rains.
Like right now.
But I do really love thunder and lightning storms.
Like
where
the dramatic.
Yeah, when it just, like, pours down rain and then it's done. And then the smell afterwards.
Smell. Can you describe the smell of thunder and lightning? Like burn smell?
No.
The smell of burnt houses in your neighborhood?
The,
It's very sadistic of you.
No, I love the smell of, like, post-rain.
Okay, small interjection. Jesse knows something about the scent of rain.
The smell immediately after rain is called petrichor, and it's... the result of a compound released by plants when it's dry, and then it gets wet, and so we smell it.
Wow, the more you know.
And how the air smells, how the trees are super fragrant. Yeah, especially on the coast here where the cedar trees are particularly fragrant and pungent just after a rain.
You get the most interesting opinions on rain of everyone I interviewed so far. What's for lunch?
Oh, I devoured my lunch already. It was a
Renaissance
Mexican chicken burrito from Renaissance, and they're quite tasty. They're spicy.
They are very good, I've heard. And what is your least favorite color?
Black.
Really?
Yeah.
Why black specifically?
It's not a color.
Would you get rid of the color black if you had the opportunity to?
No, because I don't believe that I'm that omnipotent to do such a thing.
You were, though.
No, not likely. I just choose to kind of avoid black.
Who are you and what's your position here at CJSF?
I am Ricky Castaneda Loretto, and I am the music director of CJSF 90.1 FM.
And what are you doing right now?
Right now I'm creating an ads report, probably my last ad report of the year. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, what report? An ad report?
Ads report, yeah. So it's the report that I send out to programmers and to the other staff members and to other music stations and to the NACC and Earshot in regards to what we've added in the past month.
Any opinions on rain?
On rain? I like rain. I don't mind rain at all. I am of the belief that, like, you should wear boots and a rain jacket and put up with it because you move to a city that has 300 days of downpour. I don't like heat. That's the only thing. Like, if it's really hot, I will be annoyed. But most any other weather, I'm fine with.
It is a very positive attitude towards the weather to have. Especially in this city where every second topic of conversation is the weather, apparently.
Yeah, I hate it. In the Discorder style guide, we actually specifically have a thematic style that we do not talk about the weather in anything that we do. Like, because a lot of writers, especially young writers, will often be like, it was a dark, stormy day in Vancouver, or it was raining.
That's most days in Vancouver,
exactly.
Anyway. Like, that's not descriptive at all.
Exactly. It's that's why we did away with it in this quarter, because it's a way to take away this crutch that writers seem to go on, which is like, it was raining and it was really conducive to the following interview, and it's like, yeah, but it's raining all the fucking time, so yeah. It doesn't really matter.
What's for lunch?
What's for lunch today? Oh god, caffeine, just coffee at this point.
That's not very healthy.
It's not very healthy, no. I need to do better. I have an early
just
dinner.
Just caffeine in like fluid form?
Yeah, just like coffee, really.
Oh, how do you cope with that?
Because I ate a good breakfast. And I have an early dinner, which is why I'm not eating lunch.
What's your least favorite color?
My least favorite
color?
It's
not black, because everything you wear right now is black.
And also, black's not a color, so...
Wait, what?
Yeah, black's not a color.
Care to elaborate
black,
on
black is technically,
this revelation?
Black is technically a shade, so... Apparently. According to the science of color.
So, like, your black beanie could be just, like, a really dark,
it could be a dark
red
blue,
or
yeah,
blue
or, something like
or
that.
Green?
Yeah, that's the, or it's the absence, or depending on what process you're using, it's the absence of color or the presence of all color.
But then what is white then?
That depends, right? This could get real nerdy really fast. You really want
yeah,
to
sure.
go down this way? Okay, so in the light spectrum, so in RGB, when we're talking about things that we see, which is red, blue, and green, all color is white. When you mix red, blue, and green in light, you get white. And
huh.
if there's no color in the RGB spectrum, you get black.
So what's your least favorite color?
Yeah, my least favorite color. I'd love it. I don't know if I have a least favorite color, really.
Do you have a favorite color?
I have a various...
But that's the boring question.
I have various favorite colors. I love, like, dusty pinks. I love those colors.
Pink.
Yeah, that's too bright.
Yeah, that's, like, bright pink.
Yeah, but I do like pinks a lot. You know what? I generally dislike brown. And that's weird because I like brown in certain things, like I like my tortoiseshell glasses and I like how they have brown in them. I like this brown case, but as a color, like I'm talking specifically almost from like a graphic design perspective, I do not use brown in almost any of my graphic work. I avoid it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I always feel like brown is like it's just orange, but like the more boring orange.
It depends. I mean, I can't say that I dislike brown. It's my least favorite color, but I don't dislike it. I still like it. I like all color.
Who are you and what's your position?
Hi, I'm Jake Gridowski and I'm host of The Art Show and I'm just a volunteer.
What are you doing right now?
Right now, I am writing an interview that I have to do in 20 minutes. So I have to come up, I have to be a 20-minute expert in 20 minutes.
You have to do it in 20 minutes?
Yes.
Oh. Well, sorry for taking you away for this interview.
I thought it'd be fast.
Any opinions on rain?
Rain, it's everywhere. I mean, we need moist water to live. Just, you know, sometimes it hangs out a little too much on our doorstep. I see it. Someone was nice enough to tell us. I don't mind rain. My shoes, I can't speak for them because they don't talk yet.
Oh, they don't seem to want to be a part of this interview.
Yeah, they're pretty tight-lipped.
What's for lunch?
What's for lunch? I had a nice bowl of instant noodles that I always get from the mini mart over in Maggie Benson Center. Please go check out the mini mart. The lady there is really nice.
Yeah, we don't do promotions on this show.
She's really nice. Go check out the mini mart.
What's your least favorite color?
I don't know, beige. I say that as I'm wearing beige pants. Yeah. I don't know. There's just not everyone.
White beige. What about beige?
It's just not a very exciting color. It's just like kind of there. What's I don't know.
And there's the less exciting colors than beige. Beige at least like is a color. I'm like,
okay. Here's the most boring color: eggshell white. I don't know why anyone paints their walls that. It's boring. Shout out to my mom, who finally painted over the eggshell white with off yellow white.
Cool. Thank you so much for the interview.
Thanks for making time for me.
Yeah, some fun and I want to say almost educational conversations with some CGSFers. Thank you to Jesse, Ricky, Robin, and Jacob for doing this with me. And to end this show, I am going to play a CD called Le Sœur Boulot, that's the artist and the title, and as I may have mentioned before, I have not taken French in high school, L'Amour des Etoiles. I very much butchered that pronunciation again, as I tend to do with French, but that is what you're going to be hearing next. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, you will hear me again next Wednesday at 3 p.m. or next Monday at this time again. Next up will be Democracy Now! And if you just couldn't get enough of me after this Speak Up episode, you can follow my newly created Instagram at 711.fan.number.1. And there you can check out some pre-recorded stuff that I've done in the past. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. And next up, I'm going to play the CD, which the name I said before, and I'm not going to say again because I don't speak French. And this is the CD. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.
arrivé. On m'avait pas dit qu'une fois arrivé ici, je n'aurais plus nulle part où m'en aller. Que restera-t-il de nous après nous? Que restera-t-il de nous après nous? Que restera-t-il de nous après nous? La main qui grandit est la même que celle qui se noue. La main qui guérit est la même que celle qui se joue. La main qui s'éteint et au bout de laquelle il n'y aura plus rien du tout. La main qui grandit est la même que celle qui se noue. La main qui guérit est la même que celle qui se joue. La main qui s'éteint et au bout de laquelle il n'y aura plus rien du tout. Que restera-t-il de nous après nous? Que restera-t-il de nous après nous? Que restera-t-il de nous après nous? Que restera-t-il de nous après nous?
The staff and